This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9-11, one of the smartest tech guys in the country, who understands all sides of the tech industry, from what's new, what's innovative, to what's legal, what's illegal, to what's coming, what's not coming, what's hype, what's not hype, is my old friend Scott Schaefer, who joins us now. Are you at the Blade Tech Inc. headquarters?
I am in beautiful St. Louis. We're getting a little bit nicer weather than you today, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. Nice to talk to you again. I've missed you.
And good to talk to you.
And I miss your expertise. Scott and I used to talk all the time. Here's the thing about this FBI versus Apple story. I have gone from being firmly on the side of the FBI to being completely on the side of Apple to being kind of in the middle on this and understanding both sides. But clear this up for us to some extent. Where are you on it?
Well, sure. You know, and it's very complicated discussion, number one. And it's also a very important one that we have to have. You know, there's been a lot of information. You've probably heard that in the past that Apple's been asked to do the same sort of thing they've been asked to do. They, for example, I read yesterday that they've done this on 70 iPhones in the past. And, well, that's not really true. What they did in the past was in earlier versions of the iOS software, right, the software that runs the iPhones and such, earlier versions of it, you were able to get the data off of the phone even if you didn't have the PIN code, which we did in doing digital forensics and that sort of thing. We didn't need a PIN code. But then along comes iOS version 8. Then the data is encrypted with the user's PIN code. So Apple, me, you, nobody can unencrypt it. And that's the issue today. It's not that the FBI is asking Apple to take this phone and completely decrypt it and give all the information. The FBI is asking Apple to basically disable one of the functions that only allows you to put in the wrong PIN code a certain number of times and it auto erases itself. Now, in this fashion, then the FBI can use what's called a brute force attack, right? They just try every possible combination until they finally are able to guess the PIN code on their own and get at the data. So that's really the key piece of it from a technical perspective, is just this disabling this one auto-erase feature to allow the FBI to brute force and open up the phone.
So, for instance, I've got a password locker, and the password locker is called Keeper. And if I mess up my code, it'll say you have four more attempts before all information will be erased. That's the same thing we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And most phones have something like this, the Android, Windows phones, and so on. You can only try it so many times. And it's a safety to make sure your device gets stolen or you lose it and somebody can't just unlock it. So the problem I have, and, you know, again, I'm kind of with you, Steve. I can see both sides of the debate here. But, you know, looking at it from my perspective is that if Apple writes this certain piece of software for the FBI, which, by the way, the FBI or the government could do on their own, given enough time and resources, but if Apple writes this piece of software that bypasses this auto-erase function, you know, the history of software being kept, you know, private and only one person having it, then that's gone. It's going to get out into the wild, and then that's really going to cause a problem overall. Then that's one perspective I look at. You know, it's a slippery slope. You know, what if then the government of Russia comes along and asks Apple to write some special software for them to access the iPhones? And this discussion about encryption, you know, really goes back. You might remember, Steve, you remember the Clipper chip back in the 90s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was actually the NSA's way to make a back door into all of our telecommunication devices of the 90s, which were mostly phones. So they tried that. That didn't go very well, didn't go over very well about having a backdoor because of security issues. So it seems like every 10 years or so, this discussion comes to the fore about encryption. It's just now, since we all carry so much personal data and so much important stuff in our pocket on these little supercomputers that we have now, you know, it really becomes a more salient issue to worry about just anybody having this type of software they could hack in and potentially get that data.
Scott, isn't the information, though, already all out there? I mean, we're all kind of trained and programmed now to say, oh, once you delete something, it's never really deleted. It's all out there somewhere. I mean, isn't there a way to kind of, for them to backdoor it, I guess it would be?
Yeah, you know, what we do actually, when I work with iPhones in general, is nowadays we create a backup using just the iTunes software, right, that you use to synchronize your phone, and then we work against the backup. And what happened in the San Bernardino case was that the owner of the phone, which wasn't actually the accused terrorist, but the organization they work for owned the phone. And so when all this went down, the IT department decided to remotely change the password on this phone. Okay? So now, since that password got changed, that means they don't have the password for the old backups in iCloud, so they can't use those, and they can't use any local backups either. So that was kind of, it's hard for me to say it's a mistake, because that is a good practice. The phone gets away, something happens, you know, change a passcode on it remotely. But that's something that hurt us in this case. And more to your point, you know, what really is going to be found on that phone that's not already out there? You know, a lot of the information could be subpoenaed from the telecommunication companies such as AT&T to find, you know, what calls were made and what text messages and so on and so forth. So, you know, is there anything there? Well, you know, as I tell my customers when they come to me with a device like this, I say, well, you don't know until you look.
Right.
You know,
it could be nothing. This could be Geraldo Rivera's vault.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a great analogy. There could be nothing in there but an old boot. You know, it's just we won't know until you get in there. So really the debate goes, I think, really transcends this particular case in San Bernardino, because we have to, you know, look at this as what I'm going to do going forward, because, you know, encryption is such a complicated process. It's a mathematical process. And now the only reason we're able to do such strong encryption now is because we have such fast processors. And they work so fast it could take literally, you know, some passwords, if you have a 10, 12 character password, a good one can take, you know, millions of years to crack,
right,
even on the best hardware.
Right.
So you know, that's part of it. So I think it boils down to, you know, what can the government force a software or hardware company to do, you know, as far as giving them a back door into the encryption? And I know Apple has until tomorrow to answer to the federal court saying what their position is.
So you make a really good, several really good points. But one of the really good points you made right at the top was, if the federal government wanted to, they are in possession of these phones. They could take the resources and go out and say, okay, I'm looking for the best hackers, the best code breakers in the phone business anywhere in the world. I want you to come in and find this information. And whatever we find out, we find out. They've put the onus on Apple to try to fast track this through that system. Now, Apple's point in this, I think, is valid because, again, if you narrow this court order to limit this to just these two phones, or is it one phone, I guess? But if you limit it to just these, as opposed to asking Apple to draw up a back door, to write a back door for this software, well, then it seems like the problem's solved in either case. Get the hackers du jour, the best in the business, or just do it for this phone.
Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't be shocked to find out that we did in somewhere in the intelligence apparatus have this software already has been written. You know, with all the tools of the NSA and all the computing power that they have, you know, something like this, it would be shocking if they already have it. And that's why I think it kind of transcends this exact situation about writing this software for this position. I think this is going to, you know, set a precedent going forward about what can a government or law enforcement force a hardware, software, or technology company in general to do against their will. And so that's going to be an interesting debate. And we'll see how it shakes out. You know, again, you could have a situation where we had in the 90s, Microsoft had some high encryption in their Windows software. And the government stepped in and said, no, you can't have that good of encryption and export it. So Microsoft actually had to dumb down their encryption a little bit so they could sell it overseas. So there's kind of a precedent there where a company obeyed an order from the federal government to weaken their software. But then, you know, think about the time. We're talking about the 90s versus today. The landscape is so different today. Everything's so mobile, and there's so much power in your pocket. You know, you have to think about that little phone in your pocket has
right.
more computing power than NASA had in 1969 to put a man on the moon.
Yeah, which is crazy. And you mentioned the word precedent, and you are in courtrooms all the time as an expert witness on tech cases. Precedent is key here, right? Because one of the things you're protecting is setting the precedent or not setting the precedent about doing what the FBI has asked to be done.
No, absolutely. Because you're spot on, and I think that's a great point. And I think in this whole scenario, that's the most important thing that's going to happen. The precedent will be set. Because you have to remember, the people who are going to be arguing this are not technologists. I mean, the Congress, you know, have proven time and time again that they aren't the sharpest tools in the shed when it comes to technology. We know this. So they have to base everything on what's happened in the past in the courts. And most of the you know, judges and attorneys I work with, intelligent folks, but, you know, it's not their speciality. I don't practice law. They don't do technology. So a lot of these things are so subtle and so technical. It's very difficult for them to understand. So they have to rely on the precedents previously set. That's really, you know, really the core issue for where I said that's what's going to happen here. We're going to have a precedent. There's going to be – this is the way it's going to go going forward. There will be fights. Whoever wins, whoever loses, it'll go on. But at least there'll be a precedent set, and then we'll have a little bit better idea what the position is going to be going forward. And it could affect software companies not to develop, you know, more secure systems.
Right.
If you want to think of it that way. You know, or go ahead and say, hey, yeah, we have a special phone that only us and the government can get into this phone for you. So, and some people, maybe they're fine with having, you know, that back door if they know about it.
Donald Trump has one. It's huge. It's huge. His phone is huge. Blade Tech Inc. is Scott Schaefer's company, amongst many other projects he's involved with. Before I let you go, you want to make a prediction on how this is going to end up?
How it's going to end up, I think it's going to predict that Apple's not going to have to write the software, but the FBI is going to write the software, or with their friends from NSA, write something. They'll get in there and they'll find nothing much. That's my prediction. But it's normally wrong in these cases.
It's going to be Al Capone's vault. Al Capone's vault. That's the phone. It's going to be Al Capone's vault. If people want to look into Blade Tech Inc. or anything else going on with you, what do they do?
You can find us on the web, www.bladetechinc.com, or give me a call at 314-752-7999.
All right, man. Enjoy the day. Thanks for your help.
Hey, good talking to you.
There you go. Scott Schaefer from St. Louis. He really is one. You know, the thing about Scott is, and it's not dissimilar to, who's the guy we had on yesterday, Shelley Palmer?
Yep.
You know, you take a couple of guys who are total tech nerds, but they can explain this stuff to, you know, dopes like me.
Well, also it makes sense, too, because I think the your first thought is, oh, you know what? Have them create the backdoor software, one-time use, mm-hmm. but then they explain why that could be a dangerous precedent.
And I think what it comes down to is you can't trust nerds. I mean, that's been the overriding argument here is, you know, you write this software and the nerds are going to give it to other nerds.
That's the larger argument in this whole story.
Yeah, the trustworthiness of nerds.
I don't see that.
No, you didn't say it that way?
Not quite.
I think it's shifty nerds. Wasn't I in a band called Shifty Nerds?
Mid-80s.